south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
How about this email from Calvin? He says, Johnny, I've got my plan B underway, probably leaving the States for good, destined for Central America in about a year or so. But first, the wife and I want to get some boots on the ground at one of your seminars. So please keep us posted with that. My question is, what about sports for gringos and expats in Latin America? Not participating, because I think most expats are too old for that, but spectating. I've heard you say before in your previous shows, you're not much into sports, but what about us gringos and expats who've always been into sports? What about us sports lovers? Though I don't follow Latin American sports teams much at all. My Spanish sucks, so I never much got interested in soccer or their brand of football, as they call it. Though when World Cup time comes around in the playoffs, I have been known to place a few bets. My questions about gringos and expats who end up in Latin America, who really like sports, do they end up warming up to the local teams? Do they start liking and supporting the local teams, buy tickets, and go to the games? Do they hang out at the sports bars during World Cup time and playoffs? Just wondering. Signed, Cameron. All right, Cameron. Thanks for that. That's an easy one, Cameron. In a word, no. Funny how the word no means no in so many languages, but the word yes, well, not so. How'd that happen? Anyway, you know, there are lots and lots of sports-loving gringos and expats here in Latin America, and it seems they never really warm up to the soccer thing. You know, football, as they call it down here. Sure, they maintain their U.S. sport team fetishes, but rarely do they go all in on local or national team stuff down here. Though I've seen real gringo sports fanatics test the waters and go to soccer games, but they soon get over it. Now, as for gringos and expats who are into golf, that's another thing. Most of them keep up with that once they get down here because, well, for one thing, golf country clubs, memberships, and green fees are so much cheaper down here than they are in the States. If you're a golfer, it's almost too good to be true. Not to mention they're open all year round because of the weather. That makes it super easy for gringo golfers to feed their fetish. On top of that, it seems Latin American golfers don't golf much. So the courses and clubs themselves are very sparsely populated. Sometimes you'll see you and your foursome have practically the whole course to yourself. And you'll wonder, at least I did for a long time, how can they maintain this place? Where do they get the money for the upkeep when no one's playing? Now, being that I was a golfer myself in a past life, I visited lots of country clubs and golf courses down here, and they're never busy. It's like night and day compared to U.S. courses. Practically no reservations necessary, ever. Some of them look like ghost towns, but not a person on the course at all, except maybe on weekends. Well, as it turns out, since only wealthy and upper-class Latinos can afford a country club membership or to go out and spend a frivolous day on the links, even so, it's a gringo wannabe status thing to join, so many of them join and don't even play. It seems somehow almost every upscale Latin American family has a guy who's got a country club membership, even though he rarely golfs. But they sure go out and buy the most expensive bags and clubs, even if they never use them. Turns out it's a status thing. It's all about the show. I can't tell you how many times I've walked into a clubhouse or a locker room at a golf club where I've seen rows and rows of expensive golf clubs and bags all perfectly spit-shined, with the locker room attendant sitting on his dead ass doing nothing. Because there's no one there to serve. There's nothing to do. I'm telling you, those clubs and bags look like they're in store window displays, like they're new. Turns out, down here in Latin America, the golf thing's not about being crazy about golf. The fact is, I've never met anyone down here who's addicted to that sport. Not at all like some of the golf fanatics I knew back in Chicago. I'm sure you know a few Americans who'd rather be on a golf course than with their wife or kids or doing anything else. Same thing with Latin American Harley riders. They're not nuts about Harleys. They're not bonded to their bikes and take them everywhere. They're only weekend riders, if that. There's no cult of Harley in Latin America. It's all about the fact that it's a status symbol and you have to have money to buy one of those things. But I'll tell you one thing for sure. A huge proportion of Latin American males are totally addicted to soccer, or football as they call it. I've met lots and lots of Latinos who would rather be watching the game than be with their kids, their wives, or their mistresses. Now, back in the day, I was a pretty good golfer, but I wasn't crazy about the sport itself, though I happen to be pretty good at it, much better than average. That ever happened to you? You found out you're good at something, but you don't like it all that much? Life is funny, huh? Just so happens that I got really good at golf because when I was a kid growing up in the old neighborhood, there was a public golf course about 3 blocks away. And every summer, starting when I was about 9 or 10 years old, I'd play around 5 or 6 days a week, even sometimes when it was raining. You know, back then, during the summers, you'd eat breakfast and you'd walk out the house and not come back in till dark. You know, these days, they'd take your kids away and put your parents in jail for that. But way back when I was a kid, when I was growing up, that was the norm. So anyway, during summer vacation, when I was around 9 or 10, my mom would give me 35 cents in the morning and tell me to go play golf. She knew I was a kind of a hyper-antsy kid and that if I didn't occupy myself, I'd probably get in some trouble. So for her, the golf course was just a ticket. Yep, 35 cents. And I think they bumped it up to 50 cents when I was 12. Yep, that's what it was for kids at public golf courses in Chicago way back when. Whether it was 35 or 50 cents, you could play all day. You know, when adjusted for inflation, it would be anywhere from about $4 to $5 in today's funny money. By the way, I had a great thing going. My sister worked in the clubhouse, so I'd get a free lunch out of it too. Man, back then when life was freer and easier, kids had it made. I'll tell you, if I was a kid today, who knows how many medications I'd be on. Anyway, if you had that routine every day for 3 or 4 months every summer, you can't help but get pretty good at the game. So by the time I was 12, I was kicking ass on the golf course. Again, not that I liked the game, but it was something to do. So anyway, naturally, when I came down to Latin America, I checked out lots of golf courses and discovered to my amazement, the courses were very well groomed and mostly unused, with nothing but wealthy and rich guys and children of the rich holding memberships there, but they were almost never around. Down here at soccer, or their version of football, they're all crazy about. And golf is just too expensive a sport for the average guy. So what you've got is mostly stuck-up, classist, wealthy guys, and their entitled adolescent or college-age kids occasionally hanging around. But not hanging around so they can play golf. They just hang around because there's a swimming pool and a club, a bar and a restaurant, etc., etc. And that's where they have their events. Fiestas, Christmas parties, quince años parties, etc., etc. But the actual act of going on the golf course and playing around seems to be an afterthought. You'd think after paying all that money for a country club membership, they'd be serious about it. But they're not. I've been in a foursome with Latin guys when one of them will just say, "Hey, I've had enough. I'm leaving." And just pick up and leave. Now, a tried and true serious golfer would never do that. He'd have to finish his round and see what score he got. So then why do Latinos even get memberships? Turns out it's really about country club bragging rights. It's all about the show, just like so many other things here in Latin America. And you ought to see the parade of gigantic SUVs and out-of-shape bodyguards in cheap suits hanging around the parking lot when there is some kind of event. Oh, and there's something else that's sort of strange. Now, I know every golf club's got competitions and tournaments. Still, in all the courses I've visited, I've never seen a lady golfer. Though they do exist because I've seen the golfing magazines here and they've got ladies' tournaments. And for all you militant feminists out there, don't forget to go in your closet and dust off those protest signs because Latin American golf courses have Ladies' Day. I think it's Wednesday for most courses down here. Yeah, right. Could you even have such a thing up in the States? Shit, if you had Ladies' Day up in the States, you'd have to have Tranny Day and Non-Binary Day, Queer Day, Lesbian Day. And on, there wouldn't be enough days in the week. I remember at the old golf course when I was a kid, Ladies' Day was Monday, because Wednesday was Doctor's Day. Every doctor had Wednesday off. Is it still like that? I don't know. Oh, and now that all the golf courses in the States have been forced to introduce gender-neutral tee markers, no ladies' tees anymore. Even so, somehow Latin American golf courses have refused to comply. How sexist, how awful, how unwoke of them. Who can you sue? Oh, I forgot. Latin America is not a litigious society. People just don't sue each other. By the way, all you guys and gals up in the States, next time you're at a party, I dare you to float this question. Ask your little group of partiers how many times they've sued someone or have been in a lawsuit themselves. By the way, according to the legal website LawStack Exchange, over a 50-year adult life, the average person gets sued 7.5 times. In the States, of course, with the vast majority being civil cases filed for the collection of unpaid consumer debts, residential evictions, foreclosures, property damage, tax liens, etc. And get this, it says if you're a poor or working class American, are male, and you live in a medium or large-sized city, you're likely to be sued 13.7 times in your lifetime. Of course, most times you won't end up in court, just named in a lawsuit. Meanwhile, back in Latin America, if you happen to be at a party, quinceañeros party, graduation party, Christmas party, whatever, and you're sitting down with a bunch of adult Latinos, ask them that very same question. How many times have you been a defendant in a court case? How many times have you been sued? I've asked that question a few times. I'll tell you, it's a hell of an icebreaker when you're sitting around with a bunch of people you don't know all that well. Suddenly, everybody's ears perk up. Anyway, I couldn't find any statistics on the internet like I could for Americans getting sued. But I can tell you, just by asking that question at parties, let's say you're in a group of 5 to 7 people. You'll get one or two people raise their hands. But even that's kind of misleading because when you ask them what that was all about, you'll find most of the time they're talking about a divorce. And technically, when you get divorced, you're in a lawsuit because they call it suing for divorce. But divorces aside, many times I've asked that question and no one raised their hand at all. Latinos just don't get sued. That'd be reason 3,426 through 96. Why, you better get that plan B going and get the hell out of Dodge while you still can. But I digress, as usual. So anyway, as to Cameron's question about gringos and expats coming down with a sports Jones. Luckily with the internet, Netflix, and the 100-plus sports channels you can get down here, as you can everywhere in the world, you can keep up with your favorite teams and not miss a beat. However, as far as seeing sports events live, you'll be stuck with soccer or what they call football. Though gringos with a sports Jones down here say it's a poor substitute for American baseball, football, and basketball. Speaking of baseball, take Cuba, Venezuela, and the DR. Their national sport is baseball, not soccer or what they call football. In fact, football or soccer is about as low on their list as it is for the average American sports aficionado. How'd that happen? Hey, my family up in the States was heavily into sports. You know, season tickets for the Cubs, the Bears, even the Green Bay Packers, and the Milwaukee Braves when they were around. The guys who were sports nuts in my family paid almost no attention at all to soccer. Though they may have bet a few bucks here and there on the World Cup games, they never actually organized parties or get-togethers or went to bars to watch the things. Which does beg that question, how come Cuba, Venezuela, and the Dominican Republic are nuts about baseball and not at all about soccer? And I'll bet none of you listeners out there know why. Well, here's the answer. Turns out way back when, in the late 1800s, when there were lots of Americans in Cuba, they brought the game of baseball down and all the plantation workers started playing it. And then the 10 Years' War broke out in 1868 and the ruling Spaniards outlawed baseball because it was seen as rebellious to traditional Spanish spectator sports like bullfighting. But the Cubans, being naturally rebellious to the Spaniards, kept playing baseball clandestinely in protest. Turned out to be a hugely popular way to stick it to the Spaniards. Now, during that 10-year war, many, many Cubans fled to the DR and Venezuela. That's why the love of baseball flourished in those two countries, too. It filled a void because there weren't any other organized sports for the people to play. The sport of soccer hadn't been formally organized yet. In fact, international standards and rules for the game of soccer were not instituted till 1886. So you've got 3 Latin American countries out of the 20 that are absolutely nuts about baseball, with soccer in those countries, or football as it's called, in a very distant second place. Did you know that in the year 2021, there were 98 Dominicans playing in Major League Baseball in the States, 64 Venezuelans, and 19 Cubans? By the way, in Latin America, it's not called baseball, it's called pelota, which means ball in Spanish. So anyway, that's the story. So Cameron, to answer your question, no matter how big a sports fan you are, once you get down here, no matter how long you are living down here in Latin America, you will not warm up to the local or national soccer teams. You won't be hanging out at the stadiums or sports bars cheering them on. You just don't see gringos and expats getting revved up about soccer at all. So if you think, because you've got a lot of time on your hands, you're going to do the equivalent of coaching a little league baseball team here in Latin America, you just might if you're living in Venezuela, Cuba, or Dominican Republic. But if you're living in any other Latin American country, you just won't find any little league baseball. There ain't any. Enough said about that. Let's yank the wheel to the left. Scratch that. I'd rather go right. By the way, are you still occasionally seeing people wearing masks? I bet you are. Me too, but down here in Latin America, I bet it's only like 1 in 100 or 200. The reason why I'm bringing up this sore subject once again is because I just noticed that yesterday, Ecuador, those idiot politicians in Ecuador, just reinstated the mask mandate for all enclosed areas. So now we have another reason not to recommend Ecuador as a good Plan B destination. It's not. Man, what's wrong with these malignant politician idiots? So then, what could possibly be their reasoning? Well, Here's the press release that just came out from the government. It says, and I'll translate, due to a rapid increase in the cases of respiratory disease, the National Emergency Operations Committee has reinstated the mask mandate for all enclosed areas, including public transportation. On Wednesday, the announcement by COE President Juan Zapata said the order is aimed at controlling the spread of seasonal flu as well as COVID-19. Man, don't these fools know anything about the science of masks? All the latest science shows they do not work. In fact, they can cause respiratory problems in and of themselves. However, that's not to say all maskers are fools, because there are actually four reasons to wear one, with possibly two out of those four reasons having some merit. So then what are those four reasons? Well, number one, you're on your last legs and are extremely respiratory compromised and or immunologically compromised and are thus highly susceptible to any kind of bug on the spectrum, even generally benign bugs. Like, for example, you're on some kind of immunosuppressant drugs because you got cancer. Then you might want to be wearing a mask. However, that case might only occur one in maybe 1,000 people. Number two, you wear a mask because if you don't wear one, they'll fire you. Your employer mandates it. Like, for example, if you're working at a hospital or a clinic. By the way, I'm kind of stumped as to what's happening here in Latin America. I walked into a hospital the other day and no one was wearing a mask. Of course, doctors and nurses will wear them in the operating theaters and such. But contrary to what we saw a couple of months ago, things have really changed. Almost no masking at all. Been in and out of a few clinics lately too and no one's wearing masks. Then, just a few days ago, I accompanied a gringo friend of mine who didn't speak Spanish to another small hospital slash clinic. And the obese rent-a-cop at the door wouldn't let us in without a mask. I wonder who's going to die first, me or him. So, like I said, I'm stumped. How does that happen? Anyway, there's a third reason why you might want to wear a mask. You might be one of those brain-dead sheep who questions nothing, does no research, is a slave to authority, and doesn't have a deep thought about anything. Oh, and we must not forget reason number four. For them, wearing a mask is just virtue signaling. You know, they're trying to project a sort of self-righteousness and fake humanitarianism. Look at me, I'm doing my part. I'm on board with Schwab, Gates, and Fauci. You know, those dickheads make me sick. A guy alone in a car wearing a mask, I just want to punch his lights out. Yep, I bet you see him all the time up there in the States. I see him once in a while down here, too. A funny thing, once in a while you'll see a lone, masked driver in a really high-end car, an Audi, a Lexus, a BMW. Guys like that are even worse idiots and more brain-dead than you could have imagined. Especially considering the fact those high-end cars like Audis, BMWs, Lexuses, etc., they've got air purification recycling systems with HEPA filters. And HEPA filters are tremendously more efficient at removing microscopic airborne particles than N95 masks can hope to do. Look it up. You'll see. Have you ever seen a HEPA filter up close? They've got hundreds of little pleats giving them a gigantic surface area to trap the particles. So the pores that trap the particles can be much smaller than an N95 mask. And how many pleats does your mask have? How about none? Zero. So when I see lone guys in high-end cars with masks, it's like having a sign that says, "Punch me in the face, why don't you? I've got shit for brains." Enough said about that. Meanwhile, the list of government scumbag politicians who get caught with their hand in the till grows longer and longer here in Latin America. Just the other day, Peru's newly elected socialist president, Pedro Castillo, was impeached hours after he tried to dissolve parliament. So the vice president, Dina Boluarte, now will be the first woman president Peru's ever had. By the way, you could say Peru has been going through a rocky political period with, get this, three presidents quitting or ousted within the space of 5 days back in 2020. Peru's a nice place to visit, but I wouldn't want to live there. Not as a permanent Plan B resident anyway. Meanwhile, you may have heard the news that former President Kirchner, you know, two-term president of Argentina, she just got nailed for fraud and corruption and got hit with a 6-year prison sentence. Well, you know, you have to hand it to those Latin Americans. They actually try, convict, and hand down long sentences to their even highest-ranking political scumbags, presidents, vice presidents, etc. Funny how U.S. congressmen, presidents, vice presidents, and their cabinets are thoroughly corrupt and nothing like that ever happens to them. Oh, there are accusations all the time, but none of that stuff actually ends up in court. They're corrupt to the core, but nothing sticks. That's one major difference in the way things work in the States versus Latin America. But here's what you didn't know. most of these scumbag Latin American politicians that get convicted, once they do their time and get out, they often run again and get reelected. There are no laws against felons running for office. Seems like Latin American voters have the memories of a piss ant. You know, there really is an actual insect called a piss ant. Oh, and here's another interesting thing most people don't know about Latin American politics. There's a law that exists in almost every Latin American country that if you're convicted of a crime and you hit 70 years old, if it wasn't a violent crime, you can request house arrest. And that's what happens with the vast majority of convicted politicians. They end up serving their sentences in their huge multi-million dollar mansions with their servants and cooks and gardeners, like royalty in exile. And Argentina's former president, Cristina Kirchner, is 69 now, so by the time she starts her sentence, she'll be 70, so she'll get house arrest. Oh, the pain. Such a sacrifice. How terrible, huh? I wonder which one of her six mansions and penthouses she'll get stuck living in. Maybe she'll get to rotate through them. Maybe she'll get house arrest in that $4 million penthouse in Miami. Funny how when those malignant shitbag politicians get caught, they never get their real estate seized, but they take property and goods from convicted drug dealers. Why is that, and which is the worst of those two evils? After all, drug dealers are only responding to market forces. It's all voluntary. They don't force anyone to buy their product, whereas politicians are in the business of stealing from everyone. And if you don't let them put their hands in your pocket, you go to jail. But, of course, you knew that already. Meanwhile, back in El Salvador, President Bukele, who's the hero of the people, has got 95% approval rate. Highest approval rating of a democratically elected president in the world. Turns out he's really pissed off at the U.S. media. The fake media, I should say. He's discovered many cases of fake news coming out of the U.S. False news stories that have been repeated over and over again, both on social media and in the regular network lamestream media news as well. For example, he discovered that Bloomberg, one of the world's largest financial news services, has been posting the same fake news, negative articles about El Salvador over and over again. Just in the last 2 months, Bloomberg has released as news the very same article 11 different times on 11 different dates. You know, when there's an article coming out of a news source, it's issued just once, and that's it. It's on to another news cycle, but not with Bloomberg, though. They've got an agenda to ram it down everyone's throat that El Salvador is a failed Bitcoin experiment. There's proof they keep pumping out the same story over and over again, and the news cycle keeps picking it up. And the real facts are the exact opposite of what they're telling people. In this article, President Bukele says it's fine to write a negative opinion piece, but this repetition is pure propaganda. He says, I'm not buying that the people at Bloomberg, one of the largest news services in the world, have some bad social media department that accidentally posts this article 11 different times on 11 different days. President Bukele goes on to say, this article in particular is full of lies, which is standard for Bloomberg. But what's most surprising is how the mainstream media suddenly cares so much about El Salvador. Isn't it funny, he says, before I came into office, corrupt politicians plundered $37 billion from our El Salvador state coffers, and Bloomberg wrote not one single article about it. Nobody did. Not one word from any first world news service at all. Before we embraced Bitcoin, he says, not one single first world news service or politician gave one damn about El Salvador. And suddenly, in the last year since we've embraced Bitcoin, we've got more publicity from the first world than any time in our entire history. And it never ends. We're in a perpetual news cycle. By the way, here's one of the exact quotes from this Bloomberg article that's been reissued 11 different times. Quote, El Salvador's bombastic president promoted Bitcoin as a solution to the country's economic problems. 1 year in, it's clear his revolution is failing. Unquote. Meanwhile, here are the real statistics that first world news services like Bloomberg will never quote. Since making Bitcoin legal tender in El Salvador, their GDP is up over 10%. That's never happened in their history. And get this, tourism in the last year is up 52%. That hasn't happened in any country in the world. Since Bitcoin's been adopted, employment's been up 7%. By the way, that tourism number's directly related to Bitcoin. And exports are up 17%. And their tax revenues are up 37% over that year, too, due to a huge increase in formal economic activity like tourism and construction, which is also up by double digits. The most amazing statistic of all is that violent crime is down 95%. El Salvador, since Bukele has been president, has gone from the most dangerous country in Latin America to the safest country in Latin America. That's right, the safest country in Latin America. Meanwhile, you've got all these wokesters in the United States, people who've never been to El Salvador at all, crying foul, crying human rights violations for him putting 50,000 gang members in prison. Gang members, by the way, who were trained in the art of gang violence in Los Angeles and deported back to El Salvador by the Clinton administration. Yep, that's the true story of the notorious MS-13 gang. Did you know that? Yeah, those idiot wokesters, the UN, the NGOs, they all talk about how human rights are being violated. They say there's collateral damage, innocent people. By the way, with gang tattoos, that's how you spot them. Just might get picked up and charged. Duh. But they never talk about the extreme human rights violations of the 6 million people who want to live a normal life in El Salvador. The ones who are afraid to walk in their own neighborhoods for fear of being robbed, or running a business or even riding a bus for fear of being extorted. But that's all over now. In fact, before President Bukele started arresting gang members, 20% of the GDP was extorted by criminals. And now, every small business that was being extorted has that extra 20% in his pocket. It's like giving every working person in Salvador a 20% increase in pay. Tell me that's not amazing news. But you never hear the first world news media reporting on that, do you? They hate Bitcoin, crypto, and everything Bukele is doing, because he's doing it by himself. He doesn't have to suck up to the US or the World Bank or the IMF or China. By the way, the other day I heard an amazing leak from Max Kaiser, who's moved to El Salvador and is advising the president on those volcano bonds that are coming out next year. He says they've been having ongoing meetings with the leaders of other Central American countries. They see the huge economic and social successes there. They're jealous of Bukele's success and want a piece of that action too. And Max Kaiser has just said, and he's one of the internationally known Bitcoin maximalists. He's been a kind of a crypto guru influencer since day one. Everyone in the crypto space knows who that guy is, love him or hate him. He's got a weird voice and kind of has an abrasive personality, but then again, so do I. Anyway, he says he believes the next two countries to fall in line with the Bitcoin standard just might be Guatemala and Honduras. And isn't it a coincidence that my very next Expat Insider Seminar will be taking place in Guatemala and El Salvador? How do you like them apples? We're looking at early March 2023. I'll keep you posted.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos!